Chapter 15. In the deep well of Outer Rim space, a Carrack-class light cruiser, the Oculus, sits quiet and still amid a field of debris. The debris, the pulverized leftovers from the comet Kinro, a celestial object once predicted to carve a path clean through the core worlds many eons ago, sure to destroy one or several planets and people on them. The history books suggest that it was the Jedi who banded together, and several gave their lives, some just their minds, willing the comet to break apart before it ever even punched a hole through the mid-rim. Ensign Del Tura cares little for that history. Not because it doesn't interest him. It does. His father was a history buff. Their home had little furniture but stacks of books and heaps of maps. Right now, though, the only thing Del Tura cares about regarding this comet field is that it provides him and the cruiser perfect cover. He looks over to the young Togruta woman next to him, Science Officer Nerian. She cocks her head toward him. Nerian is cold, efficient, all business. The woman keeps her headtails pulled back behind her, bound with a small black cord. She studies him and everyone around her like they're winged insects pinned to a board. He likes that about her. Del Tura suspects it's why she's good at her job. Speaking of that, he gives her the nod.
Launch the probe droid.
She returns the nod.
Launching Viper probe droid. Designation Bulk 1.
A tap of the button, and out there, in the void of space, a plume of gas, and the droid launches. It's an Imperial droid, stolen and subverted for Alliance. He has to correct his thinking. New Republic purposes.
We good?
He asks her. She turns a dial on the console and flips a switch. The screen starts to fill up with data, and the speaker plays the strange encrypted droid song.
Already reporting in with atmospheric data.
Thank you, Officer Nerian.
He takes her hand and kisses it. She offers him a small smile. One of his greatest, most cherished things, that smile. The fact that he alone seems able to crack the ice wall facade she's thrown up gives him faith in himself, herself, them as a pair. The New Republic. Heck, the whole galaxy. Optimism blooms. He calms in. Akbar's face appears on the screen. The Admiral looks tired. Unsurprisingly. Holding together the pieces of a broken galaxy is a strain. Del Tura can only imagine the toll it has taken on the Mon Calamari.
Probe launched, Del Tura says.
Excellent,
Akbar answers.
See you again in 6 hours, Ensign.
6 hours. The time it will take for the probe droid to enter the space around Akiva. Though even now he can see the planet. Just a small marble floating out there beyond the debris field. She smiles.
We have time. Dinner, then rest?
Dinner, then something else, then rest?
She chuckles. A musical sound. The argument raging long into the night, as turbulent as the storm outside the satrap's palace. Though the satrap seems to be the only one utterly disinterested in the storm outside, and the storm raging in this very room. He sits in the corner, slumped against the wall, snoring.
We mustn't forget that we have the credits,
Arson Crassus says, rapping his knuckles on the table as he speaks. He does this whenever he feels he's making an important point. And it would seem that he always feels he's making an important point as he makes this knock-knock-knock gesture with irritating frequency.
The credits to spend how we see fit!
Jillia Shale sits stone-faced, barely having moved in the last many hours, as if this isn't taking the toll on her that it is on the rest of them. Shale says,
Credits will not buy back our galaxy. They will not buy the hearts and minds of the people. And the Imperial coffers are far less formidable than they once were, Arson.
We still have the reserve accounts. The banking clan has wealth, tangible wealth. We can plunder yet and
plunge the galaxy into a recession?
Shale barks in a huff.
Oh, yes. That will surely win us the confidence of the people.
It's not about winning over all the people,
Crassus says.
I told you already, the best way forward is to establish a formal splinter empire. Set up a truce with these New Republic slime dogs. Allow them to go their way and we go ours. We're already locked in something of a cold war with those ninny manderers, so we make it official.
Shale rolls her eyes.
Yes, let's build a wall down the middle of the galaxy. They can have their half and we'll keep ours. It doesn't work like that. Let me make this abundantly clear to all who dare listen. We lost this war. We played with a foolish, overconfident, reckless hand, and we paid the price for it. There is no truce to be had. The New Republic will not abide us taking our toys to the Outer Rim. They will hunt us down. They will try us as war criminals. They will jail some of us and execute others.
Sloane watches as the archivist struggles to keep up, hurriedly taking notes. He and the satrap are the only others without a formal stake in the meeting allowed in the room. Even Adia must be elsewhere, though stormtroopers guard the door, of course. Once again, Arson leans forward and starts to speak, rapping his knuckles on the table to punctuate his words.
Shale, you were a vital strategist for the Empire, and yet you lament the Empire's strategy!
Arson! Ray blurts out. If you bang those knuckles on this table one more time, I will break them with a stick!
Nay, that's no way to speak to me,
he blusters. Pandion smirks.
She's right, Crassus. It's deeply irritating. Do it again, and I'll break the other hand to make sure it's really, truly done.
The banker sits back, arms crossed over his barrel chest. He mopes like a scorned child.
The strategy of the Galactic Empire, Shale begins, was not under my supreme control. I'll make it clear yet again that I disagreed with both implementations of the Death Star. I opposed its creation from the very beginning, and in fact that opposition marginalized my input going forward, except perhaps at Hoth. But the Death Star was our undoing. That old phrase, don't work your children in the same mine, applies here. Putting so much time and money and effort and people into the ecosystem of that massive battle station was a fool's crusade. Palpatine was arrogant.
Teshu, who has been mostly quiet this entire time, frittering with his fingers and the tassels at the ends of his sleeves, as if this is all very boring to him, or as if his mind is simply elsewhere, finally speaks up.
Palpatine's arrogance is undeniable. One also cannot deny that without it, the Empire would never have existed in the first place.
Moff Pandion, Grand Moff Pandion, apparently, stands up, begins to pace a semicircle around his end of the table.
I for once agree with Jillia Shale. Not just that the Death Star was our greatest mistake, but also that no truce will suffice. That will not slake the so-called New Republic's thirst for our blood. They've got it in their heads that we're monsters. It is decided. But that also means we cannot merely surrender. They'll want their taste of blood. Don't be surprised if the best of us get dragged out into the streets so we can be shot by some savage with a slug thrower.
Yes, Valco,
Shale says.
We know that you want to attack, 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 no matter how much it will cost us to do so.
He sniffs.
So you'd rather lay down arms and bow your head for the executioner's axe? You wouldn't want to go out fighting.
This isn't some kind of inspirational story. Some scrappy ragtag underdog tale. Some pugilistic match where we're the good-hearted gladiator who brings down the oppressive regime that put him in the arena. They get to have that narrative. We are the ones who enslaved whole worlds full of alien inhabitants. We are the ones who built something called a Death Star under the leadership of a decrepit old goblin who believed in the dark side of some ancient insane religion.
Yup Tashu raises a quizzical academic eye toward her. Pandion just sneers.
Were this a better day, you'd be executed for treason, General Shale.
See? Shale says. We are the ones who do the executing, Grand Moff Pandion. If we surrender, the aberrant kindness of the New Republic may translate to us. We may get to keep our heads still.
She huffs.
Besides, we don't have a meaningful strategy of attack.
Of course we do, Pandion says with a laugh. Are you mad? The rebels, because that's what they are, rebels, criminals, deviants, did what they did with almost no war machine in place. Insurgents, all of them. They managed a few lucky shots with their slingshots, but we still have the ships, the men, the training.
He points to Arson.
The money.
Then why do governors turn away from us every day? Why do we lose more ships every week? Why do we see holovids of freed worlds throwing parades and tearing down statues? They did so much with so little, Pandion. You misunderstand our place in history.
Then we do much with little. Besides,
he waves his hand dismissively,
those holovids are propaganda, and you damn well know it.
The reality is, the Rebel Alliance doesn't have the resources to keep control of this galaxy. But we still do.
And
here he turns toward Ray Sloane.
Let's not forget, we still possess a super Star Destroyer. Isn't that right, Admiral Sloane? Or do we possess it? Perhaps only you possess it. Perhaps you're being a greedy little child who doesn't want to share your fleet with the rest of the Academy.
An expected commentary. One he's been making again and again since they began this thing. Ray says the same thing she says every time he brings it up. The Ravager and its fleet are at the disposal of the Galactic Empire, Valco. The question remains, he echoes her response even as she speaks it, though with a considerably more mocking tone.
The question remains, what even is the Empire at this juncture, and who controls it? Yes, I'm aware of your stance. I just want the room to be aware that you're the one with your finger curled around the trigger of our greatest weapon, and yet you keep it hidden. Well, we don't even know where, do we?
Your spies haven't served you that slice of the pie yet, hmm?
She says, putting a small curl at the corners of her lips. Pandion starts to protest, but she wants to control this meeting, so control it she does.
This meeting is to decide the fate of the Empire with the input of several advisors, not just one. If I wanted to take the Ravager and seize control, I could make that attempt, and I might even manage it. But I'd rather not make the same mistakes as in the past. Now, Grand Moff, we have heard from you. We know your position, again and again. One person we have not heard from is you, Advisor Tashu. Would you enlighten us?
Tashu looks up once more as if all this is a distraction.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Tashu was a close advisor and a friend, as much as one could be, apparently, to the former Emperor Palpatine. The man who was once senator, and then chancellor, and the man whom rumors said was also a dark Sith lord. Amid the Empire, the presence of the Sith was less a fact and more a myth. A few spoke of it as being possible, but most believed it to be concoction. Palpatine would not be the first ruler to invent stories of himself as if he were of cosmic import. The history crons say that a regent of the Old Republic, Hylomane Lightbringer, claimed he was born in the dust of the Tymphonic Nebula and could not be killed by mortal weapons. A fact proven untrue when he was indeed killed by a mortal weapon, bludgeoned by a chair, apparently. Palpatine's legend extended too, to his enforcer, the brutish Darth Vader. Sloane believes their powers to be real, though perhaps not as omnipotent as Palpatine would have preferred everyone believe. It is then no surprise that Tashu cleaves to those ways when he speaks. He says, "You chastise the dark side as if it is an evil path, laughable for its malevolence. But do not confuse it with evil, and do not confuse the light as being the product of benevolence. The Jedi of old were cheats and liars, power-hungry maniacs operating under the guise of a holy monastic order, moral crusaders whose diplomacy was that of the lightsaber. The dark side is honest. The dark side is direct. It is the knife in the front rather than the one stuck in your back. The dark side is self-interested, yes, but it is about extending that interest outward, to yourself, but then beyond yourself. Palpatine cared about the galaxy. He did not wrest control simply to have power for himself. He already had power as Chancellor. He wanted to take power from those who abused it. He wanted to extend control and safety to the people of all worlds. That came with costs. He knew them and lamented them, but paid them just the same, because the dark side understands that everything has a cost, and the cost must always be paid." A moment of silence. Then Pandion snort laughs. Rey thinks, "If the Emperor was still around, that single utterance would earn Pandion the loss of his head. That's the cost that would be paid for such treasonous disdain." The Moff holds up a hand and operates it like a babbling puppet.
"You say all these words, Advisor Tashu, and yet none of them sound like they have any bearing on..."
Another snort laugh.
"Anything at all."
Tashu offers a beatific, self-assured smile. "What I mean to say is that Palpatine was a smart man. Smarter than the combination of all of us here. We must emulate his path. The Emperor knew the dark side was his savior. And so we, too, must make the dark side ours."
"Huh," Shale grumps. "And how do we do that? I don't think any of us are trained in the ways of the Force."
"No Sith remain," Tashu says. "And the lone Jedi that exists, the son of Anakin Skywalker, possesses an untouchable soul, at least for now. We must instead move toward the dark side. Palpatine felt that the universe beyond the edges of our maps was where his power came from. Over the many years, he, with our aid, sent men and women beyond known space. They built labs and communication stations on distant moons, asteroids, out there in the wilds. We must follow them. Retreat from the galaxy. Go out beyond the veil of stars. We must seek the source of the dark side, like a man looking for a wellspring of water."
Crassus twists up his pudgy, jowly face so much it looks like a wrung rag.
"You're saying we leave? We pack up our ships and run away? Like fearful little children, afraid of Daddy's belt?"
"Not fearful," Tashu says. "Hopeful."
And from there, a brand new fusillade of arguments rise up. This time from each corner, all at the same time. A cacophony of the same arguments. Truce, money, surrender, Cold War, Hot War. All of it nonsense. None of them agree. Sloane wonders if ever they will. Which means this summit was a foolish endeavor. But we still have to try. The Galactic Empire is a broken mirror. Many reflections of itself, shattered and separate. Sloane tells herself, it's up to me to repair the glass, to fix the reflection. She believes in the Empire, and she believes that she is the one who can and must fix it. An ascendant empire will again rule the galaxy, and her place in it will be cemented. No longer kept to the margins, no longer left off the ledger. Sloane will matter. She stands up.
Please continue. I'll be back.
They don't even notice that she leaves. She's not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. In the space above Akiva, a Viper probe droid decelerates with cautious bursts from its retrothrusters. When finally it stabilizes, its five spider-like limbs extend outward. Its eye glows. A series of small antennas emerge from the top of its domed head, all meant to take measurements. It begins its scans. A hard hand cups under his chin, moves his head up, back, left, right. The flat of this intrusive hand slaps his cheek. Not hard, just pat, pat, pat. Wedge inhales sharply, his eyes open. It's her, the one who caught him at the communication station, the one who put a blaster round in his back.
What now?
He says.
Come to torture me yourself?
The other one, the one with the pale face and the dark wrinkles, skin marked with bold striations as if he were half dead, isn't here. But he appears now and again. Maybe once an hour, though it's hard to say because time is slippery. It's always just as Wedge starts to sleep again. And this strange man, he hurts Wedge whenever he shows. He cut into Wedge's side with a knife. No deep slashes, always shallow cuts. He thrust a spark prod against the inside of Wedge's thigh, and when he did, everything inside Wedge lit up like a malfunctioning console. One time he just came in and noisily ate fruit. At no time has he said anything. Then he just licked his fingers. The other times he just chuckled quietly as he delivered pain. But this one, this woman, an admiral, isn't she?
No,
she says. I'm not a torturer.
No,
he wheezes.
Of course not. You're the questioner.
I thought so, but I'm not sure.
Nearby, the medical droid checks the tube that winds around his arm and plunges into the skin.
You wouldn't answer me anyway, would you?
No,
Wedge says. He tries to put some carbon steel in his voice. He tries not to let his fear creep into that word.
If she senses fear, she'll pounce. Tear into him like a wampa scenting blood on the snow.
But he is scared. He came all this way, through countless battles in space, over snow, across desert and swamp and open sky. And now, at the end of it, he's here. Wounded and strapped upright to a table. Tortured to death. It wouldn't matter anyway. I ask you about vital New Republic details. Ship movements, base locations, attack plans. What could I do with it? Not much, I'm afraid.
Ready to surrender yet?
He says, giving her a smile. It's not a kind smile. It's cruel. He means for it to hurt.
I'm laughing at you,
he thinks.
Let me ask you this. Why?
Why what?
Why be a rebel? Why join?
To destroy the Empire.
She shakes her head.
No, too easy. That's just the paint. Scratch off the color. There's something personal underneath it.
He again shows her his teeth. Baird in a terrible smile.
Of course there is, Admiral. The Empire hurt people close to me. Family. Friends. A girl I loved once. And I'm not alone. All of us in the New Republic, we all have stories like that.
He coughs. His eyes water.
We're the harvest of all the horrible seeds you planted.
But we kept order in a lawless galaxy.
And you did it with a closed fist instead of an open hand.
You have a way with words for just a pilot.
He tries to shrug, but even that hurts. A grunt comes from the back of his throat, and he bites back any further cry. The woman nods, and then turns and leaves without another word. Ensign Deltura's head hovers above the table, a blue glow surrounding the hologram. Akbar leans forward at the table.
You're quite certain, Ensign?
No sign of Imperial ships, Admiral.
But you did find signs of your own.
Just debris. Nothing you'd find with the human eye, but the Viper is a surprisingly effective probe droid. It found molecular remnants indicative of our own ships. Yes, sir.
The A-Wings.
Akbar hmms.
Something shot them down.
Something from the surface, sir?
Unlikely. Couldn't hit an A-Wing from that distance.
Akbar's long, webbed fingers mesh together. They rub against one another. He turns his chair to the other person in the room. This person, also a hologram. And this hologram is only barely a person. The image stands there, off to the side, like a ghost. The body and face shifting and distorting, shadowy and unclear. This is their inside man. An informant known only as the Operator. So far, his intel has been trustworthy, impeccably so, which makes Akbar all the more dubious.
What say you, Operator?
The voice that emerges is as distorted as the visual, a mechanized, warped sound.
Does the droid detect any traffic in and out of the capital city, or around the planet at all?
To Deltura, Akbar says,
You heard the question?
No, sir. No ships at all.
The operator says,
Have the droid ping all the comm relays planetside. See what happens.
Deltura nods, says something to someone outside holorange, likely his science officer, a young Togruta woman. Moments of uncomfortable silence spread out, like something noxious spilling across the floor. Akbar likes none of this. A septic feeling sits inside him, sucking up all the optimism he had possessed. The ensign's glowing holographic head returns.
Nothing,
he says, almost shocked.
Nothing, sir. The probe droid cannot ping any of the relays. It's like they're dead.
Communications blackout. An Imperial trick. They are there, Admiral Akbar. Their ships must be in hiding. But if no traffic is coming in and out, they've instituted a blockade. No ships, no communications. Something is happening. I do not know what.
Thank you,
Akbar says.
You will act on this?
The operator asks. Eager. Too eager. Akbar doesn't answer. He turns off the hologram. Deltura asks,
Is there anything you want me to do, sir?
Hold position,
Akbar says.
I need time to think and confer with the others. Thank you, Ensign.
Admiral, sir.
The man's face disappears. Worry gnaws at Akbar like a school of brine maggots. He needs time to think, but too much time, and they could miss a vital opportunity. Or, he thinks, escape the jaws of yet another Imperial trap. Is this a ruse? Or is this the real thing? Could be a secret meeting. There, an irony too bold to ignore. Once it was the rebels who had to sneak around and hide their presence. Now it's the Empire. The roles are reversing. A sign of their nascent victory over Imperial oppression, perhaps. But he worries too. about their overconfidence. The Empire isn't gone. Not yet. It's waiting to strike again. Of that, he's quite sure.